All right, Brad, I understand this week is a kind of a milestone for you. 20 years in the Army Reserves, correct? Yeah. So congratulations. Good stuff. All right, so, well, if you read the email update from the church this past Friday, you know that I'm not planning on a sermon today. And if you didn't get that message, or if you're a visitor and you were hoping for a sermon, I don't know if anyone ever really hopes for a sermon, but if you were hoping for a sermon, we'll have one next week for sure. What'd I miss? What? I still can't hear. That's what happens when you turn 39, you lose your hearing. All right, there are a number of different matters related to the life of our church that the elders have been talking about for a while, and we'd like to bring our folks up to speed on those. So this is somewhat kind of like a little bit of a congregational meeting, you might say. The first one isn't really one that the elders have been talking about, but I think this would be a good time to kind of fill you in. Something I think at least is kind of exciting that is in the works. And a couple weeks ago, I was invited to a luncheon with our Congressman Jim Banks, and it was a small group, maybe 15 people. I'm not sure how I got invited, but I actually had the privilege of sitting next to him. And out of that, I was able to talk to a member of his staff about Jim coming to our church on a Sunday morning, and that looks promising. I'm hopeful that that will work out. You may remember 2 or 3 years ago, we had the former Congressman Marlon Stutzman come and share. And that proved to be a great opportunity for us, very informative meeting. And so this would be similar to that. And so again, like all things like this, timing is always the challenge. Banks is actually in Indiana through the week, but he's seldom here on weekends. And so he goes back to D.C. where his family lives. So we'll just kind of have to see how that plays out, but I'm hopeful. All right, moving on to something different. I need to share with everyone a couple changes in regards to how adult workers here, that'd be Sunday school teachers, nursery volunteers, youth group helpers, and so on, how they interact with children under their supervision. We haven't had any problems here, and so we don't want parents to get unnecessarily alarmed. Oh no, what's going on? Nothing like that. But what we are seeing in the news every week, this is an area that we just can't take for granted here. So better to err on the side of caution. And the changes we are making should not prove to be all that burdensome or really burdensome at all. First, we have revised our youth supervisory policies in screening form. And so everyone who works with children in any capacity here, you'll need to fill one of those new ones out, and we will get that to you soon. The main difference in the new form is that adults must now agree to a criminal background check and secure 2 references. And these references would be any 2 members of the church that you've known for at least a year. They're not members of your family, and they will offer reasonable assurance that you aren't likely to abuse or molest children. We also, in our written policies, cleaned up our language on adults being alone with minors. For instance, adult men are not to be alone with any minor, girl or boy, unless they are a blood relative or a legal guardian. Now, there are some exceptions provided for that, and those are spelled out in that written policy. And as a reminder, these policies are posted in each of the classrooms, and they are also on the main bulletin board. Secondly, this week, Josh and I installed security cameras in all the classrooms, and they will be recording the Sunday school hour each Sunday in each room. In fact, they are recording even now. And this is something that I, Carrie and Kim and Tom came up with, and we've now implemented it. It seemed like a good idea. And this, of course, will protect teachers from any possible false accusations and help verify any legitimate complaints. I subscribe to a journal that specializes in laws and taxes concerning churches, and this is really a big issue in every publication. And it's an area that we can't take for granted or be sloppy in. And certainly what we have been seeing going on in the Catholic Church really should just sober all of us in this. All right, next item. It's kind of a big one for some, but for others maybe not so much. But this one's going to require a little more time, for it involves spending a lot of money. And these things can tend to be controversial, contentious in churches, and hoping to avoid that. And usually things go better if you take time to explain the plan and the reasons for it and invite input from our members who would like to weigh in, and we certainly want to do that. Except for replacing the roof on the front part of the building, we haven't really done anything significant when it comes to upgrades to our facility or our property since we moved in 11 years ago. And if you've been reading the reports on the bulletin board, you know that we've been talking about asphalt for the back parking lot there on the south, which is currently gravel, or actually more like weeds at this point. We considered the advantages of asphalt, got a rough idea of the cost that would be involved in that, and then after more discussion, we moved ahead to obtain a formal quote. And the quote came from a company called HEV Construction out of Auburn, a company that Brad McDaniel highly recommended. So let me work you through the advantages, and most of these are going to be pretty obvious. And I even have a PowerPoint for this, as you would expect. First on the list, of course, asphalt would be really nice to park on and walk on, pretty obvious. Asphalt will better accommodate wheelchairs, strollers, walkers, that sort of thing. It's going to be easier to clear off the snow, no more cleaning up the gravel in the spring that gets pushed into the grass, that kind of stuff. And of course, it's going to reduce and eliminate dirt and mud being tracked in, reduce dust, possibly eliminate that. Each summer, weeds take over the lot. It's a big problem right now today, and asphalt, of course, will eliminate the need to kill those weeds. And every 3 or 4 years, we need to add gravel and grade, and this will, of course, eliminate the need to do that. Gravel lots do require maintenance. And the upgrade will improve the value of our property. It will certainly improve the image. And along that line, asphalt will bring our property up to modern standards. Any place of business in town that is open to public is going to have a paved parking lot. And regarding churches, one would be hard-pressed to find a church, at least in the city limits, still using a gravel lot. Also, once the asphalt is down, it will be striped, and this should increase parking spaces because currently folks park 5 feet from each other. And hopefully if we do this, we'll get into practice of parking in the designated space marked by the stripes. All right. And as we think about the future, we'd have to accept the fact that unless we move, we will most likely asphalt the lot at some point. And so the thinking is, let's enjoy the benefits of it sooner than later. For instance, if we were to expand the facility, I can't imagine that we'd continue to have gravel at that point. So I was a little apprehensive going into this because it was my understanding that paving the gravel in the back lot would require a retention pond for the runoff water. But apparently that isn't the case because of the size that we're talking about. And it was also my understanding that the city would come upon us and require these beautification enhancements, you know, grassy islands strategically placed in the lot with bushes and flowers and trees and waterfalls and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, but this isn't the case either. And that's because the lot is in the back and not the front. So both of these points came in as great news. And perhaps this was doable after all. But even so, it's still quite an investment. To pave the gravel lot in the back, the price came in at $30,724. This sounds like a lot of money. It is a lot of money, but keep in mind that this is quite a bit of square footage, and this is a commercial property. You can't really compare it to the upgrades that you do at your own home. Now, we are also given the option of chip and seal, which is half the price. And so that was certainly appealing to think about, but chip and seal, it works well for rural roads. It's not especially practical for parking lots. On hot summer days, folks would be walking on soft tar, and it'd be a mess on their shoes, a mess in the church as well, and we wouldn't want that. So if we were to do this, it would seem that asphalt would be the way to go. Now, on something like this, we could anticipate a number of objections. I kind of wasn't sure whether I should get into these or not, but I decided to, And the value of exploring these objections is that it helps us to think through a church's philosophy on spending. So some of the application here would extend to upgrades and expenses beyond that of a parking lot. So as we work through this, you might just kind of keep the bigger picture in mind there. And I will state the objection, then kind of bring a response to it. Paving the parking lot is not a necessity, all right? That is true. It's not a necessity. But it is not really a luxury either. It falls somewhere in between the two. It has functional advantages and investment advantages. For one thing, we'd have to admit that our church has spent and continues to spend money on non-essentials all the time, like air conditioning. And though we are thrifty here, we have not taken a minimalist approach to our spending, and we could cite lots of examples for this. We've bought padded chairs instead of metal cold fold-up things. Even having a building, you know, a huge expense, is an example of this. So for us, it's not whether the expense is foolish or reckless or extravagant. We don't think that it is, but it comes down to this, whether the benefits are worth the cost. I think it's reasonable for us to have a facility that represents the average of the homes of our members, and it's probably safe to say that most of our homes have air conditioning and have a hard surface driveway. Not all, but most. And maybe even some have a small lot for a couple cars to pull into. And, if you happen to own a business that invites the public to come into it, you're probably going to have air conditioning and a paid parking lot. It provides and conveys a welcoming environment. So it's not extravagant. There are genuine utilitarian advantages. Another possible objection would be affordability. Can we actually afford this? 5 or 6 years ago, we would have said, probably not. But today we can. We can afford it. We don't have a mortgage. We don't have any debt. Giving continues to be pretty good. We have been putting money aside each month for future upgrades to our facility. And we now have, if I have my figures right on this, $70,000 in that fund. And so not only can we afford it, but it fits into a budget we have designated for upgrades just like this. And this $70,000 fund does not include the anticipated major expense that we will face at some point, and that is the main roof here above this part. And but we have been setting separate money aside for that each month as well. So financially, we've never really ever been better. Offerings are down a little bit the past few months, but so are expenses. So far this year, the difference is $20,000 in the plus column. So yes, we can afford it. We're actually in a good position to do this. Another possible objection could go like this, a third one. The money would be better spent on missions and other ministries. Short answer is yes, probably so. But that could be said about all sorts of things, not only here at church, but in our own private lives as well. We could make all kinds of cuts in order to give more to missions. I had a whole list of these, but I trimmed them down. We could get stingy with the thermostats, colder in the winter, warmer in the summer. We could save money, give more to missions if we asked Carrie to not clean the church, and we just took turns doing that ourselves. In fact, we did that at one point many years ago. Same with Austin. We could all take turns mowing, save a little money. We could do away with the church picnic. I mean, the list goes on. Why not take the money folks give for coffee and give that to missions? Some of the ministries we support have paved parking lots. Maybe we should stop supporting those and give the money to those that don't. I mean, I don't know. So the argument in one sense is valid, and I appreciate it, but it tends to be a little manipulative, for it sets things up as either or rather than both and. And given our financial health and anticipated expenses for next year, I think it's pretty safe to say that we will be increasing our missions budget next year. And actually, since April 2002, when we started keeping better track of these sorts of things, started using software that would track it, we have given $332,000 to missions and ministries and benevolent needs, and which is more than what we paid for this facility. And so we can do both. Four, another objection could be stated like this. We don't know what the future holds, and this could prove to be a bad choice. Of the objections, this is the one that carries the most weight with me, personally, but it's also the weakest of them, I think, at the same time. Spending this kind of money always triggers all kinds of fears in me. I always have this severe case of buyer's remorse. But for instance, what if the nation or culture implodes and Christians will need resources to care for each other? I kind of worry about that. All you can do with the paid parking lot is park on it. You can't eat it. You can't sell it. Parking lot for sale, you know. We could, I suppose, erect makeshift tents and live on it if we needed to. But all sorts of things could go south in the coming years, and we could regret this. You have to realize that. We might lose two-thirds of our members, or two-thirds of our members might stop giving. On the other hand, we might double in size, triple. And if the economy continues to boom, giving might go up a lot. So overall, I think when you weigh it all out, it's kind of a wash. Overall, it's probably unwise to make decisions solely based on speculations about the future because there's no way to know. Thus, everything should be tempered with as the Lord wills. We will do this or that. So we can continue with the gravel, consider asphalt later when we expand or move on it now and start enjoying the benefits of it, especially as we think about winter coming. If we move on it now, then we might want to consider what we would call option number three. While we are at it, it would probably be a good investment to add a coat of asphalt to the existing lot that is already paved there in the front and on the side. Those lots have not been properly taken care of. They are deteriorating, and it's quite common to simply add a coat of asphalt rather than trying to make the repairs. Now, for us, there are advantages in doing this. To asphalt everything at the same time will give the whole parking lot a uniform look. And from here on, we can then treat, seal it all at the same time as needed, I think like once every 4 or 5 years, something like that. Plus, there is a low area on the east side over here where the two lots come together, and that can be fixed if the asphalt is applied at the same time, kind of merged together. No low area there collects water, and this would be a good opportunity to take care of it. But this raises the price from $30,700 to $55,000, and that's a lot of money. It's still within our budget, but this would include that strip of gravel over by the basketball court and the entryways off the street and everything. And again, it's a lot of money from the viewpoint of a homeowner, but it's not a lot of money from the viewpoint of a commercial property. If we think of our church as a business in town that is open to the public and want to be inviting, then doing this would make sense. If, however, we think of our church as a private clubhouse to be enjoyed by the members and would just as soon keep to ourselves, well, that may be one of the reasons why not to do it. When we moved in back in 2007, I contacted several places in town that paid the lots. None of them were interested at that time. These folks that Brad recommended have done lots of churches. They've been in business for almost 40 years, and they've been great to work with, been very professional. They've not been pushy. I've posted their quote on the bulletin board. So we basically have three options: do nothing, pave the part that is gravel, or do everything. So if you have thoughts on this, we just invite you to share them with us. And conveniently, for Dave Stevens, he is not here this morning. He's at the lake. And so if you are angry that we are even considering this, call him. If you have nice and helpful things to say about anything, you can talk to me or Tom. All right. But seriously, though we are certainly entertaining the idea, we have not made any decisions on this. We have mixed feelings about it ourselves, and we would certainly welcome your feedback, and that's why we present it to you this morning, so that you know what we're thinking, what's going on with all this, and give you a chance to weigh in if you'd like to. All right, next item is to give you an update on the eldership itself. A few months back, you will remember that we solicited the congregation for recommendations, and we got quite a bit of feedback. And we started with those who received the most nominations, for lack of a better word. And assuming that they met the qualifications, we explored with them what their level of interest might be. A number of guys said something along the line of, I would like to at some point, but not at this time. We didn't have a set number in mind. Maybe we would invite one or two guys. Of those we would invite, there'd basically be two phases involved. I think you're aware of this. The first would be to take a year, have the person join our meeting, share in the discussions, participate in any studies we might be working through, and see how it goes. Very informal, no commitment. The candidate could drop out, no guilt. If we didn't think it was a good fit, then it'd be agreed, no hard feelings kind of thing. And so that first year would be just holding things with a very loose grip. And by good fit, just to clarify, I don't mean that we have to get along on and agree on everything. Everyone who has ever served, or anyone who's ever served as an elder here, has brought to the table some slight differences in theology and even philosophical understandings about what a church should be and what a church should do. And so good fit is referring to the question of whether any of those differences are so great that they'd prove to be counterproductive, even contentious. And sometimes you just don't know until you've had time to work together for a while. And I would think that would take a good year. After a year, then, if things looked promising, we would extend a formal invitation to join the eldership as a provisional elder. And in this phase, things would be a lot more intentional. You might say we'd move from courtship now to engagement. And then after 6 months, we would offer him to the congregation for your affirmation. And depending on the results of that, officially install him in the office. So it's kind of a long and slow process. It's in some ways worse than seating a justice to the Supreme Court. Two or three months ago, we met with Steve Long, and he was agreeable to the whole idea and the long process involved. And he has now joined us in our meetings. And we have benefited from his input quite a bit already and quite hopeful about this possibility. Steve has been, of course, with our church a long time, is certainly a faithful member. He's wise, he's responsible, he's respected here. His sermons are always well-received, and he and Carrie are always eager to serve. So I'm just happy to give that as a report to you this morning. We might be talking to others along the way, and if someone else comes on board, we'll make that known in the reports on the bulletin board. Does anyone ever read those reports you put on the bulletin board? All right, some? Good. All right. Now the last one, a few words on changes that are in the works regarding the Lord's Supper. And we've already received a fair amount of input on this one. I had originally for this morning planned to share the history of how the Lord's Supper has been practiced in our church and the reasons I proposed to the other elders for increasing this to once a week. And why we then settled on something different. But all that came as a bit much to get into. And so yesterday I trimmed this down quite a bit, actually kind of drastically. As you know, for many years, we've been observing the Lord's Supper once a quarter. And when we do so, we've taken the whole morning and we've centered it around a particular theme. The songs, the readings, the sermon all play into that theme. And this has worked out well. But there have been some disadvantages, especially with offering the Lord's Supper only four times a year. For instance, a couple obvious ones, those teaching Sunday school or are in the nursery on those mornings, they miss out, and that's another 3 months until they have another opportunity, and sometimes, depending on the schedule, they could even miss out again. Also, if we are in an extended series that isn't all that Christological, like the one I did on Psalms or Proverbs or the Song of Solomon, then we could inadvertently go several weeks in a row without highlighting the work of Christ on the cross. And indeed, that has been the case, and it is what kind of prompted me to rethink our whole practice here. Now, certainly, Christ's sacrifice would be referred to in prayers and sung about in songs and maybe even mentioned in a sermon, but something that is at the core of our faith needs to be continually emphasized, I mean really emphasized, and done so intentionally. And of course, the Lord's Supper provides an opportunity for that. And so increasing the frequency of our observance ensures that Christ's death and resurrection will get the attention it deserves. So without getting into the whole discussion of weekly versus monthly, and that has proven to be a substantial part of the discussion, The plan we have settled on for now is to change the practice from once a quarter to once a month. We would not necessarily center the whole morning around a particular theme like we have in the past, though we might from time to time. And we'll be starting this next month. So let me offer you a picture of this. You get kind of an idea what to expect. And we'll use October as an example when we start. The last Sunday of the month is the 28th, and that's when we would observe the Lord's Supper. And the format of that day would be pretty similar to that of any other Sunday. We'd be scaling a few things back to make room for the Lord's Supper, which would be observed at the end. So for the sake of the example, let's say that the theme for that particular Lord's Supper service will be the fact that no one can boast in their salvation, that this is the gift of God, cannot be obtained by works. We all stand equally in need of his mercy, equally empty before the Lord. All right, the sermon may or may not be related to that, but we will have a communion hymn that will be, along with a congregational reading that will be, and words of reflection that will highlight that theme. And very important, we will prepare ourselves for this all month long. Each Sunday in October, we'll close the service with a congregational reading that will highlight that particular theme, reminding everyone to ponder it through the week in preparation for the upcoming Lord's Supper service. And then on the last Sunday, that will be kind of a fulfillment that we've been leading up to the whole month. And then in November, we would start in with a new theme. At some point, we'll have volunteers from our congregation sharing this, leading the communion time. Looking forward to that. And so there'd be variety, continuity, and increase in frequency. And that's basically our plan, at least for now. And if you have thoughts on this, again, we would welcome you, invite you to share them with us. So I just kind of ask that you bear with us through this change. There's bound to be a few bumps, but the Lord's Supper, of course, is a rich time, and so this seems to be a really good step to take. All right, so next week, yes, there are still gnats in here. You have them. I've got them up here. Anyone been fighting gnats? All right. Whoever left the food here, man, I'm going to find you out. All right. Next week, we'll actually have a real sermon I've been working on. I'm looking forward to it. And actually, I gave it to myself because I needed to hear it, and I benefited from it. So I'm looking forward to it. All right. I received it. It was brutal, but yeah. All right, Tom, I'm going to have you come, and if you can share a few words in close, if you would, please.